to talk about Raise the Bar, Not the Price. My name is Eleanor, a former social media manager at Westside Music. Also play bass in a couple of rock bands and have that historic behind me. But here we have a few very interesting people. Let's do a short presentation and what's up.
Originally from Örebro, I've been working as a promoter since I was like 13, doing small shows. And like 15 years ago, I moved to Stockholm and started being a promoter and an agent at a bigger agency, first MTA. And my last work was at Luger, a Lion Nation-owned company. And 7 years ago, I founded Komet Agency, who are three people today. We have like a gross revenue of roughly 10, 11 million Swedish crowns. We do 350 shows this year. Roughly 50 of those are as a promoter. And yeah, that was the short presentation.
Thank you, Victor.
Hello, my name is Jess Kinn, and I've been an agent now for over 10 years. I was at an agency called Paradigm, which is now Wasserman, and the pandemic happened, and I kind of decided to go into live streaming for a few months. A guy called John Ollier, who was at CAA and looks after the small artist Ed Sheeran, decided to open his own agency, and I went and joined him in Feb 2021 and kind of brought my roster with me. So I work across artists such as Years and Years, Mallrat, to a band called Swim School, to another artist who's playing today, Fiona Lee, who is in the audience.
Great. Hello, everyone. My name is Lenny. I run Cultivation, which is a small booking agency and artist management and a consultant company. I run it together with Johan, who unfortunately couldn't be here this weekend. But Johan started Cultivation about 9 years ago, and I joined him 4 years ago. So I've been a booking agent since just right before the COVID. But my background is in event management and marketing and communications. And I've been playing in bands since I was a teenager as well. And something else. Yeah, and we have 12 bands in our roster. We booked around 200 shows this year for them. Most of them play also internationally. And sometimes we book for them abroad. Sometimes we collaborate with agents in other territories. And it's swing jazz, blues, rock, art pop, banjo, punk. Yeah.
Banjo, that's an interesting genre.
Thanks.
So we are going to talk about Raise the Bar, Not the Price. Can artists, agents, promoters, venues all be happy together? At the same point, keep the audience coming back? Because that's a tricky question of today. So let's look how it is from your standpoint. And We all know that people get less and less money in the pockets with the higher food prices, inflation, interest rate, and so on. So how does that affect you and the people working in the scene? Do you want to start, Jess?
Yeah, I think it affects quite a lot. I think it affects ticket sales. I think it kind of affects why and when you should tour live. I think, you know, a lot of bands used to kind of go out on the road and tour venues and different markets. And now I think doing that can be really costly. And I think also since pandemic, a lot of people, when they used to become fans after they saw something live, now people seem to be become fans before they see a band live because everything's online. So I think, again, it's kind of trying to figure out when is the right time to tour your artist. And I think that's more important kind of now than ever, really.
What do you think, Victor?
No, I completely agree. The tickets are going, the headliners seem to do well, and the bigger artists have their place in the market. From my hear from local promoters in Sweden, in most countries, is a decline in ticket sales and other revenues as well. But also, if you have the tours that you book, if it, the tickets are fairly priced, if the art is fairly priced, you have a good plan, you have a good reason why going on the road, that ain't my headache in the end of the day. These are those tours that you, oh, we add another leg to the tour without a good plan, without a release, without social media content. You get a bit greedy, overcharged for the tickets. You add maybe some special packaging thing that the band doesn't need. So if you promote or you package your festival, your event, your venue correctly, tickets usually go, but some promoters I talk with talk about a 30% loss in revenue, and that means their entire margin is gone. So, yeah, it, of course, it affects, and it's also really hard to have a reference year to what it looked at like. 2019 is starting to get far away in time. 2020 was weird. 2021 was really weird. Last year was weird. This year is, well, weird. So, like, but that's the million-dollar question, how to solve it and find new ways to work with each other and find right concepts and go on tour on the right time.
Yeah. Lenny, what do you think?
Yeah, of course, it affects us all, and it's quite challenging for many, for every one of us, in different ways or in the same ways. Yeah, of course, we had the COVID for several years, just making us all like fall down on our knees. And then when we were was just about to like rise again, the economics hit us even more. So it's like we've been struggling for several years now, and people have less money, less energy, and less time. So every aspect affects this, of course.
Yeah. Have you changed your way of working? Jess, you mentioned that before you saw artists live and became a fan. Now it's the different way. How do you work with that?
I think it's, yeah, kind of making sure the timing's right. I think it's really hard. It's kind of, it's just a feeling of, you know, when do you tour, when do you not? How can you make that tour the best possible tour possible? Is it the right opportunity at that right time? I think as well, you know, for next year, a lot of artists played the last 2 years. So festivals are struggling for next year to find headliners, which kind of means artists lower down the bill are finding it even harder to get opportunities. There's festivals closing on stages, you know, smaller stages. So that's also hard. So I think it's also about artists needing to take those opportunities when they can, but then the cost of that is hard because, you know, to do something last minute, that costs more money. You know, a tour bus or van, that costs money. Yeah. So it's just, yeah, it's kind of a bit of a cycle at the moment of trying to wait to the, hopefully for the next couple years to kind of even out a bit.
Yeah. Is it the... Do you like work with the smaller tours, or how do you lower the risk? Because you can't get back, like losing money all the time. How do you work?
Yeah, I mean, so the bigger tours as well. You mm-hmm. know, big production costs, bigger artists to put on a great show. It costs a lot of money, so that's also hard as well as the smaller ones.
Yeah, and we've seen that on the ticket price as well. The past years, do you see a risk with that? Like people that are enjoying music, they are not millionaires. Maybe not all of them. What's the challenge and risk of it, Victor?
Well, that's a big question. But the ticket price has been going up for quite fast for the past 10 years, from being quite constant in many years. I watched that show. It's not only like the tickets price, the food and beverage section is going up, wardrobe. If you're a venue working with parking, it's gone up. Everything has gone up for the consumer. And you're going to have those killer shows, the Taylor Swifts or whatever, that are going to... People don't seem to mind to pay, but in the mid-level, the early days band, I used to like... when we booked Baby Acts in Örebro when I was a promoter, I think we shot like 60, 80 Swedish crowns. Today the same act would be for... And then we did your Lykke Li, your Amanda Bergman, your Captain Röd, your Håkan Hellström.
Yep.
Håkan Hellström was a bit far further in his career then, but the thing is now, as a promoter, your risk for one of those shows, I think we maybe risked 40,000 Swedish crowns. Now you maybe might be risking a 120,000 for a similar act, for a similar show. Somewhere down the line, it has to be passed down to the consumer. But also, the consumer has less money to spend, and that's probably the headache for every agency and promoter, that you're trying to fine-tune your business without scaring away too many people. And I don't think we have like one fix for every show, for every venue. And I think that all promoters have to consider revenue streams. We did a concept together with James and just to get out our Baby Acts this autumn. I don't think we would have done that concept in that way 2019, but now it makes sense. So from all sides, and artists that are flexible, that can find ways to tour with cheaper costings, are probably going to do more shows, maybe find that extra leg, maybe find that recent tour and build a story around it, find their audience and find new audience as well.
I also think kind of the promoters seem to have a lot more power though now than they ever did. So, you know, there's so many artists kind of vying for that one slot at a festival that if an artist doesn't want to, you know, if an agent says, oh, can you get me more money? The promoter could just say no, because there's probably 10 other artists similar wanting to play that slot. So that's kind of another thing to think about as well, you know.
How do you deal with that, the power?
I think just being really honest and open with managers and artists and just saying, this is the situation we're in now. You either want to take that opportunity, make it the most amazing opportunity, or we let it go. We maybe think about it next year. Is this right for the strategy? And I think, yeah, sticking to strategy is really, really important more than ever, to really make sure you're sticking to strategy. But then, as you were saying, being kind of flexible and be able to change plans when you have to. But I think it's transparency with your managers and having good relationships with them and just saying, you know, this is the slot you're going to get. Maybe if we wait, we'll hopefully get it next year. We're not sure, or you won't be able to play it next year. And just, yeah, being honest about it.
Yeah.
I was thinking about the last question about the way we work, if we changed it now when it gets hotter. Not yet, or not super much, but we just have to stay more, we have to be more flexible and of course more effective, because time is valuable, and so more effective, more flexible, and just stay transparent, and also,
what was I thinking?
We really have to, as booking agents, I feel really have to, in my role, keep adding value.
Yeah,
being the link between the artist and the venue or promoter, keep adding value to both parts, and not just being a person that costs more, or just add value in other ways, both for everyone. So that's just our main like goal all the time. But still, we're working almost as usual, I think.
Yeah, and I think it's about, you're not just an agent anymore. You're not just putting an artist into venues and that's your job done. It's actually become, hopefully, for me anyway, more creative than that. You know, it's thinking about fun, different ideas, unique spaces. What can we control? You know, if we can't control a support tour, we can control putting on a really amazing, you know, London headline show that's going to be a real moment in your career. And I think it's trying to, exactly as you're saying, add to the role and be as creative as you can and be close to your team and make sure, you know, you're on this journey with your team together for a really long time and you know you're like adding this value, exactly that.
Being like, as a booking agent, try to be a supporter and come up with ideas, both to the artist and the promoter or venue. And sometimes we give advice on the marketing, and we help each other out with the Facebook events and spreading, helping out with the marketing, and also keeping in mind the whole process. Going to a concert or an event, it's a long process. It's not just what's happening during the concert. It's from the start when you're thinking about going somewhere. It's when you buy the tickets and when you're when you're excited to go and you're talking to your friends and you're preparing. It's there. It's the experience, and also afterwards, documentation or everything.
Sharing the moment.
So if we all of us, booking agents, artists, and venues and promoters, keep in mind the whole process and really work together to make it stronger. Mm. I think that's a good way.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of not one size fits all for every artist. You know, I work with a lot of queer artists, and for them it's really important that the places that we play are safe spaces, and you know, there's gender neutral toilets, and you know, certain festivals that make sure they're feeling safe. There's not people on the lineup that have said, you know, kind of awful comments. So I think it's all of that thought of you're not just booking a show, you're listening to the music with the artists, you're putting in ideas, you're thinking about the experience and for them and the fans. You know, there's ideas you can put in where, you know, I had this, an artist was playing and we kind of did a meet-up before so that any fan going on their own could buddy up with someone so they weren't going to, you know, so it's ideas like that I think are really important.
Do you see that unique thing is being more and more important now?
Yeah, and I think being authentic as well as an artist and making sure what you do is you as the artist, and it's not someone, you know, you can help an artist have an idea, but it's kind of got to come from them as well. And I think that is what fans want. They want that closeness. They want, you know, uniqueness. They want to feel like they know that artist and not just going to a live show. There's other things to it as well.
Well, I can just agree, making those nights special, package them well, and just not feel like it's just another generic tour, not just another night at your local venue. But I just wanted to pick it up, something you mentioned before, that it's really the buyer's market, and has been for several years. When I started, I could send a band out, and I know I had 10 promoters in a city interested in doing them. Now it might be 2, and it's like, even though in some cities we have more options, but it's really the buyer's market, and nobody can force you to do shows that doesn't make sense for you. Well, if you're maybe a promoter at Live Nation, a big agent in the UK can force you, maybe sometimes. But for the, that doesn't either build some relationships in the long run, which is all about.
Do you think live performances is about to change again? Because during the pandemic, it was all about streaming. Do you feel you get different ways of support bands or artists now? Is live thing the thing to do, or is it changing?
I know what your question means. I think a lot of artists that say broke in the pandemic on TikTok, for example, a lot of them have not actually played live before. So sometimes you put that artist into a live space and they just do not know what to do. Mm-hmm. So I think remembering that you actually have to nurture an artist's live shows very carefully can get forgotten. And I've seen it, and a couple artists like that don't even have more than 2 songs, and they're kind of being put in front of people and they just don't know what to do. So I think that's kind of a thing that I've noticed.
Yeah.
Well, things are moving really fast and have been going extremely fast with TikTok, and an artist that could be huge this year could be gone 3 years
from now. Yeah,
yeah. And usually artists used to last, and I think that artists get so many questions and opportunities, And too many of them do them without a decent plan, without decent packaging. They're just so eager to see, oh, if we do this TV format, we can get this reach. And then the TV format does, oh, yeah, you just have one song. Could you do like an 80s sleaze hard rock cover? And it's maybe not the right thing for the artist or whatever. And I think that people are too eager to get like that traction and more streams, but it's so short-sighted many times. And you have to stand up, like, ask your question, is this festival right for us? Is this venue and tour? Is this streaming thing? Is this TV format the right thing for us as an artist? So you just don't do, you get your gear and then you're gone. As you also like working with queer artists and see if like, is this building appropriate for our audience? Are they going to be here? Are they going to be comfortable? And that you just don't look at the figure and be like, oh, this makes sense in like this part of blah, blah, blah. And look at the money, look at the building, and look at the entire context of the festival. And if you do the right thing at the right time, things still work, I would say.
Yeah. But how do you feel about, you're talking about the artists being big on TikTok, it goes fast. Maybe they're not that big in like 2-3 years from now. Is it a challenge for you with the fans being so unloyal, can I call it that, or changing their ways of what they like in music? How is that a challenge for you? Because you're talking about strategy and keep it to the strategy, but then maybe the strategy doesn't work. How do you know when to let go, or when is the time right, and how do you the challenge with the unloyal fans or the fans?
I guess it's trying to be as nimble as you can to just, you know, there can be a plan in place, but then if something happens and you do really feel like you want to kind of go and explore those markets, as long as there is a strategy still in place, there's a release plan, there's other things around it, you're not just going out and focusing on the live show. There's, you know, there's a single that's going to come out, and there's, again, there's the strategy and there's a plan. But I think as long as you can kind of be malleable with the plan and try and say, when everyone gets, you know, people kind of can get really, really excited that they want to play now, and you just say, look, take a breath, have a minute, you know, it's going to be fine, like, just take a moment and, you know, let's stick to what we said we were going to happen. We can change a few things, but really I think keeping that strategy in place is still really, really important and the key.
Yeah,
and especially like, sometimes you, I just thought about it this morning, that you have this artist that gets one single, they don't have maybe the next single done, they definitely don't have an album, they start to get traction, and there's some vague plan, you'd be like, oh yeah, it's going to be an album out in April, and it just, on, you know, it's like, yeah, this is what we said, this is what we're working with, but it's risky. So if you just like take it down, have a meeting and be like, so look, we got all these offers, there are many questions coming in, but I think we should like try to keep it a bit slow until we actually have a full length or whatever format that seems possible. But also on the other end from TikTok, there are the hard rock audience and metal audience that are like extremely loyal and are being with the band for years in different subgenres in general, that people feel like, yeah, this is really an artist that I love, it speaks to me. And they're going to be with them for many, many years to come. Just look at the whole, like, a genre very different and far away from metal. If one look at the Taylor Swift and her whole, like, the whole thing around her concert has been so huge. It's, like, really impressive. And I'm glad to see that a very, very young audience in many cases going to a bunch of shows, connecting and having a great time. And I'd love to see it.
Just going to say, I think tying in with kind of, you know, about the kind of money side of it, I think as well what you said about, you know, people getting signed and then getting excited and wanting to play, it's, you can also have kind of labels telling you to, saying to us, you know, let's go and play in, I don't know, let's go play in South Korea, let's go play in Japan, let's go play in Australia. And I kind of had that with one of my artists, not actually a TikTok artist, but you know, they kind of said that, and then we went to try and explore those markets, put the shows in. They all sold out, 3 shows in Australia, you know, 3 in Asia, and the label would not release any more label tour support. So it's kind of, you said to one thing that you really want us to go and explore those markets, but then the actual cost has risen so much that the labels can't keep up with how much things are actually costing now. And, you know, they want us to do one thing, but then when we do it, shows are sold out. We've kind of done our job. The labels can't actually come and do what they're supposed to do as well. So I think that's kind of become an issue too.
One thing you actually also rarely mention as an agent, that it's like such a big fight for emerging artists right now. I heard one band at New Music Friday Sweden like a couple of weeks ago, and it was like, this sounded good. I think they had 4,000 streams. They are a great band. And I was like, okay, they're from Northern Sweden. I have 2 shows in Northern Sweden with 600 capacity. We're going to do, like, probably going to do 400 or 500 tickets. Great support slot for them to do. And it probably makes sense for the promoters to add them as well. It ain't going to be a big thing. And then I sent them an email and was like, yeah, nice to hear from you. Are you sure you're not going to sign us? Because we got offers from these 2 agencies. And I was like, okay, so you released 2 singles. They haven't kind of performed. It sounds really good. You sound like nice people, but it's so weird that people are already fighting for a band that is like has made so little impact and so early on in their career, which is also like a bit weird thing. And then if you go up the bill, it gets messier and messier with the fighting. And that has been a huge moment in agents, new agencies, and artists moving around since the pandemic. That happened before, but it's really increased as well. And sometimes a lot of promises are being made when, not all the time, but some of the time, when an artist changes, and the promoters sometimes get the short end of the stick of that.
Mm-hmm. Lenny, do you have anything to add?
Or maybe changing the subject a bit, but I was going back to loyal fans. I was thinking, because the subject of the panel, how we should work together to keep the audience coming back, and speaking about fans, artists can have fans, should have fans, but also festivals, venues also should build their fan base. Yeah, mm-hmm. To like create this community for people willing to come back, maybe every week or every month to go to different concerts.
Do you have any example for that in Sweden? Do you think we work with that in a good way, or
you mean like building?
Festivals, Viva Sounds, for example, maybe, or any bigger ones.
No, but I think everyone is doing their thing and doing their best and to create their own atmosphere and their own fan base. And of course, Viva Sounds has been doing it for several years and people keep coming back and know that this is a great experience. So it's, yeah. Yeah.
I do agree that, like, it's not just us that need to be supporters of the artists, it's everyone involved. It's the big promoters who own festivals that want to help build that artist with you, you know, and kind of put them on those stages as well. So, yeah, agreed. It's like everyone should be a fan of the artist and a supporter.
Yeah. How can you put pressure on them or going for a change with that? Because as I see it, with a big, big promoter like Live Nation, don't see it happen.
I think it's actually the people. I think it's a people's business, right? Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, I've got a very good close friend who's a promoter at Live Nation, and he's loves the artists they work with. We work on a lot of things together, and he's there championing it. You know, a lot of my artists. So I think it's finding those people that understand your artist and really want to push with you and go on that journey with you. So I think you can kind of say things about the company, and I totally understand, but actually it's finding those people is really, really important.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but also like going on tours, and sometimes one of the tours we did now this spring, it was like 6 dates, not big tour. But I think with every promoter I went to, I want this date, I want this ticket price, I want this club, and I want this DJ. And we've done so many shows together at this venue. I know your costings and break in going to be here, blah, blah, blah. Mm. And I said, this is what I want. And I think all promoters just said yes on the phone call because I know the venue so well. I know the clubs. I know the local DJs so well. So nobody had a complaint. Nobody even bargained on price. Mm. And I think that's when you find the right fit. You've been working together for a long time. And you also know that the club has their traction, and hopefully 1 + 1 = 3 if you add all of that. And I think that's more important than ever. And if you're a small venue, you can definitely niche and reach out to an audience and make them love your venue as they love our bands, hopefully.
Yeah. But how do you think the scene will look like in 2-3 years from now? We have had the pandemics and stuff like that. Will it go back to the same thing, or in which way does social media get more and more important, or how have you any feelings for that?
Okay, I think that's probably the answer that no one wants to answer. It is that we don't. No one really knows. I mean, I think everyone thought post COVID we were going to have this like amazing resurgence in live, and we did. Yeah. But then the war happened, and cost of living, and all of the other things that we can't control happened. Mm-hmm. So as much as we can say, like, we really hope it's going to kind of even out and find and kind of go, I don't think it'll ever go back to how it was, but I kind of hope it will just be a bit less crowded, and, you know, we'll just kind of, again, I think people kind of will hopefully be more kinder, supportive in this business, because I think, again, we all kind of all hoped that would happen, and some people were, some people weren't. But yeah, I think it's hopeful that it will get better. And I'm sure, you know, and that's not me trying to sound negative, like it is getting better, I'm sure it will, but we just don't really know. Like, we just want to put on good shows for our artists and do what we can, but there's so many things, especially at the moment, that we just can't control.
Yeah.
Well, I think this industry has always been changing, and changing mm-hmm. fast. And of course, things are going to be different in 2-3 years. Social media is going to keep expanding. I think we're going to see a shift in marketing budgets as well. I think right now I'm talking with all my artists to spend like less on music videos and spend that money on like hire a photograph, take some extra content, make visual content for social media. Don't use like TikTok on the same way you use Instagram and Facebook. And we never had these discussions in 2019, or at least I didn't. Mm. And the marketing and the plan and not the sales of artists are taking up so much more of my time right now. But if you do those things well, hopefully the economy is going to be better in 2-3 years. Nobody knows, hopefully. Mm. I think we might see that some artists are going to struggle, some are going to thrive. In the spring of 2020, everybody was hoping for like, oh, we're going to have this big coming together, and like Michael Rapino and this FKP CEO was going to have their task force, but then it didn't turn out that way. And some things have changed for the better, some have changed for the worst. And I think that's going to keep on going. But in the end of the day, I think most promoters are getting a better service from artists and agents than previously. I think most ticket holders are getting a better experience at the concerts. And I think that most artists also get a better touring experience in the end. So things always get better, but I think it's going to be a bump on the road for the past 2-3 years. But the long term, or like the long trend, has been that everything has been going up. Mm. And that's also one of the biggest issues right now, that you want to lower the ticket prices and nobody really knows how. And the margins are so thin, both on the touring side, for the artist, for the agent, and for the promoter. So I've always been an advocate for raising ticket prices, but maybe not anymore.
But have you seen a change in, like, you're talking about the unique thing, and in the panel before, we were talking about the smaller cities, the smaller markets, where we can find people that care more, and the meeting places. Do you think it's a market to explore putting up shows in smaller cities or being more near the audience? Do you, Lenny, feel, I know you have the experience from both big cities and Dalsland.
Yes.
Which is really
yes. I used to live in Gothenburg for 8 years, but 2020 I moved to the countryside, 1 hour by train north of Gothenburg, in a small town with 800 people, with a very living community. A lot of culture and live things going on. And I think that's all. Yeah, that's the future, coming together and put on some more smaller shows as well, mm-hmm. and building community together. What more to say?
Yeah, but because I was thinking about, we're talking about the reinvestment and that somebody needs to put on the artists and bands that no one knows about. And that's when everything is going up, the ticket prices, everything, and US agents doesn't want to take that risk. No. But how do you work with that? Is this the way to go? Smaller concerts, or do you have any ideas?
No.
You have the answers.
Do I know everything? No, I don't. But for us, it's like we have 12 acts, and a few of those are like smaller emerging acts, and that we put time into helping them and trying to get them concerts. Mm-hmm. And that's just, yeah, so we have like an amount of the acts we're working with that are smallest. So that's our giving into it. Yeah. That's what we can do with our time. I don't know if that was the answer, but yeah.
Yes, how do you work with that?
Well, I think, again, it's kind of back to what we said earlier about trying to be smart with where you go. And I think that is a great idea, trying to go to much smaller markets. But just think, again, it's kind of that's back to the cost of what that would cost and if there's actually money there to be able to do that. And I think an example of, you know, with a US artist, for example, bringing them over to the UK and Europe is, rather than doing a 3 week run of dates, which maybe you would do pre-pandemic, you know, you're really picking your key markets and doing a week's tour and maybe doing touring, you know, you do it's shorter and more often so that you kind of don't have to, you know, a lot of the costs would be from doing that a big run of the whole UK, Europe. And I think it's, again, probably just trying to be as smart as you can right now and then really going at the right time.
I think that diversity builds resilience in so many ways, and that's so diversity in shows is absolutely a good thing. Like adding small venues on the countryside, if possible, in between, and keep like working that way, working even more in that way, just acknowledging the small towns and trying to go there as well. I don't know how you work, but with your bands.
Well, both. It's so artist dependent, I would say. We have these artists that want to perform 100 shows a year. We have those that want to make the one special night. Mm. And the one special night usually ends up in bigger cities, or especially when you start going out to like leaving Scandinavia and going out more like playing the small mid-level clubs in Europe or festivals. Then you usually like, okay, we can make two Italy dates. Then you usually shows the bigger cities. It's been a long-running trend to make fewer and fewer and bigger shows in general. Mm-hmm. But we have those artists that can tour so cheaply. They want to play a lot. And they usually love to go to the midtown or like smaller municipalities. But it's also a question. It depends, so artist-dependent. But mm-hmm. as if you work in a city with 10,000 people or a municipality around that level, then you have like, you can really build a community vibe around your venue, around what you do, in a way that I think it's much harder to do in Gothenburg, even if you work with a small amount of people as ticket holders.
So it's up for the small countryside venues then. I really don't have so many questions left. Run out of questions. But yes, do you think festivals will be more and more important? Because you think of the price and the amount of artists and bands you can get to see, because I was thinking about the risk of putting up shows, the risk of like putting up new artists or bands. Is festivals the answer to that, or
I think actually it's building your headline ticketing touring first, because I think you can play at a festival and you can play a 2 p.m. slot, you know, on the Sunday at a festival, and no one knows who you are yet, and you play to about two people, and the cost of going and doing that festival actually doesn't really weigh out the rewards. So I think you should really only play a festival at the time when you know there's people there that know your music, want to come and see you, and want to pick you over hundreds of the other artists playing on that festival. So really I think it's trying to build your own touring in those markets first.
I completely agree that you should focus more on building your own artist career. And I think we've all been to those festivals with a lineup that is so wide. Every genre, they booked a field, they put up a Ferris wheel. They don't like have any mission or idea what they want to do. They just want to do a lot of tickets. And I think those festivals are probably going to struggle a lot. And I, you know, as you said, you've seen this like 2 p.m. show. And and then you go and see a band, and then it's a completely different genre afterwards. The capacity of the smallest wage is 20,000. It might be 4,000 there, but it feels so empty still. So, of course, festivals are going to be a matter. It's going to be a big thing. But I think also, like, a lot of companies have to consider what's the mission with this festival? Who are we talking to? Who is going to buy this ticket? Who is going to love this event? What competence do we have to build a lineup around this? Because I think there are a lot of festivals in Sweden, and I think it's still underdeveloped. I think there's room for so many more festivals, and especially looking in like 2,000 to 8,000 capacity. It's a rough capacity in some ways to make a lot of money, but it's a nice capacity you can really build something that is strong with an audience.
But I think if we wrap it up, we talk about being unique and building your fan base, both for bands and both for promoters and for the venues as well, festivals at least. Do you have anything more to add besides being unique? We talk about social media, but if everyone is going to be on social media, it's like you get so many... so many artists that want to hit you and talk to you, like it's getting too much crowded on social media maybe. Do you have anything more tip or thing you're thinking about than being unique?
I think I said this before, but being kind of authentic to yourself as an artist and knowing that you're, it's really important to have a great team around you, but also I think it's just so important to know who you are as an artist before you go out and do all those live and play those opportunities, because if you're doing that and you don't know who you are, I think that can be kind of a big thing that you potentially waste an opportunity, but it's just not what you thought it was going to be. So kind of knowing who you are is like kind of up there before you kind of go out and do a big run of dates and big live shows. So.
And that is for the venues as well. Victor, do you got any examples of venues that does this really well?
Oh, yeah, and I think like we've seen a big growth in venues that are also like an experience traveling to the venue in this Gothenburg, Västra Götaland region. You could talk about Slussens Pensionat, Strömma Farm Lodge, where it's a complete experience going there, and they maybe don't do the most amount of shows. It's an intimate, very close experience. It's an accommodation, it's a food and beverage experience. Lilla Björke in Mariestad comes to mind. 10 years ago, I think I worked with like 3, 4, 5 venues. I think now it's like 20, 25 of them. A lot of them have been really thriving. I think it might even more. But that they have been working with something special, and they have a community, and they can also be quite good in smaller, mid-sized cities to bring out emerging acts, and they built the reputation that is, if we book this, it means something. It gets attraction from their following, and it might not be big, but to get like a stamp of approval that if this fest, it could be the same with like Sweden Rock or Way Out West. They get this stamp of approval that it's been, or Pustervik. It's a lot of venues have that like tastemaker thing, and I think a lot more venues could be looking over their entire thing. How is the experience coming here?
Yeah, and I also think for people that get less money in the pocket, it gets more important to them to have this whole experience with the venue, the people around it, food, the beverage. Because if they choose to go out on a night and buy this ticket and see this artist, they want the whole thing. Do you think that people get more and more picky?
I don't know if they get more and more picky, but it's like I have less money, and so is this concert or festival, is it worth it? Is it worth the money? Is it worth the time I have to change from my comfy mjukisbyxor? Is it worth it? Is it worth the effort? So it's about money, the time, the effort, and of course that makes people picky. So because we only have a limited amount of those things, so of course we have to choose wisely more nowadays. They have to, yeah. I guess.
Just going to say about the venues, I think it's, you know, it's also important to, if you're kind of doing those bigger venues and those bigger markets, there are things like in the UK, we've got like Independent Venues Week that they do something in the 1st of Jan, and that's really important to try and support that if you can. So again, kind of just trying to work with everyone around you to like make the experience as good as possible, and not just playing, you know, doing other avenues, I think is important. So there's things that we can do.
Thank you. Do you have anything to add, Victor? Otherwise, yeah, Lenny.
Yeah, I was also thinking that I would love from now on, and just to for us all to like face the coming years. Mm-hmm. I would love as a booking agent to. I need to invest more time in talking to other booking agents and talking to artists and talking to promoters and venues and festivals. All of us have less time nowadays, or we're stressed out, many of us. Yeah. But if we could find the time and talk to each other and realize more about each other's realities and come up with ideas, and helping each other out, taking care of each other. I think we need to do that even more. And I know it feels like something you say all the time. Oh, we need to cooperate more, talk more. Mm-hmm. But I think we need to say it again and make an effort, all of us. Yeah. So that's why Viva Sounds is so important for us all to meet up and talk. And so I think that's one key, and I would love to do that. So hit me up if you want to talk.
And come to Fiona Lee's show at 8 p.m. tonight.
I can just add one thing that Lenny was also kind of... But most promoters I talk with, it doesn't matter if they're in Hamburg or in Oceania and Gothenburg, a lot of them are struggling with exactly the same things, to be honest. Mm. And that's why these festivals, I think, is so good. Because then you can be like, oh, my issues in Trollhättan oh, the guy in the next town has the same thing that he's fighting with.
Thank you so much.